Welcome, everyone, to Working with Purpose. Our show is dedicated to the intersection of faith and business and organizations and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. You can join us in a lot of ways today. You're going to hear us live, but also you can be on the davidstarkcollective.com. You can go in there and see all of our podcasts, listen to all of our podcasts. Also, you can see, get us on iTunes, and it's under Working with Purpose. We're glad you joined us today. Justin has the week off, but I'm joined by a good friend. His name's Tim Jeffrion. And Tim Jeffrion, I've known him for a long time, but I've also known him as a leader of organizations. We're going to talk about one of those organizations today. I've also known him as a teacher and as a preacher. Also, he has been a professor in many different venues. And so, Tim, I'm excited to have you on the program today.
Well, I'm really happy to be here, too. Thanks, Dave.
And so let's just tell them a little bit more about yourself and the organization. In this case, you're going to talk about faith, hope, and love.
Okay, thanks, Dave. I'm ordained as a minister. In fact, both my wife and I are ordained, and we served pastorates together.
Yes.
And I did some teaching, adjunct teaching, after I earned a PhD in New Testament studies.
Yes.
Then switched again to a not-for-profit leadership here in the Twin Cities for about 10 years. And then I felt called to start a ministry, a global ministry, called Faith, Hope, and Love Global Ministries.
I know. It's been an exciting run. And he said it in passing, but Jill Jeffrion has her PhD in her own right, and
right.
She's a fabulous teacher herself. So we'll just shout out to Jill today. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit more about Faith, Hope, and Love. What inspired you, Tim, to want to form this organization?
Well, maybe I should just step back a little bit and just tell you a little bit more about the organization,
please, per se. Yeah.
And it's the idea of Faith, Hope, and Love Global Ministries is to come around the leader, him or herself. Mm-hmm. And it's in a very specific way, because the vision, when I close my eyes and think about what would be the outcome of this ministry, I can picture happier, more vibrant, spiritually alive minister serving in their context and better equipped to do so.
Mm-hmm.
To be healthier and better able to use their gifts. And the result will be more fruit for the sake of Christ and his kingdom.
That's great. So the focus is on leaders.
It's really on the leaders themselves.
Yeah, which is fabulous, because you do great things for leaders. Leaders are going to do great things for the people, right? I mean, that's a great ministry, right?
And as a pastor myself, and this is what led me to really creating it in the first place, mm-hmm. is my own experience as a pastor. And I was in a church and ready to change the world, coming out of seminary, and discovered it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. And everybody didn't think I was the great guy that I thought I was. And so it was very challenging.
Yeah.
And also very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one day just driving down the road. This is back in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And even thinking way back then, I can imagine doing a ministry one day to help guys like me.
You bet.
Who are just out there trying to do the best job they can, but discovering they're over their heads.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're not sure who to go to or where to find help or encouragement.
That's so true. I see that in so many leaders, Tim. You know, and not only are they alone, but where can I be real about everything?
Right.
So because I can't do that, it's voyeuristic inside the organization, right? And who's on my side? Who's somebody that the only thing they're focused on is my success or my health? That's just a very important thing.
And I struggled just with perspective. How do I look at this? What's going on? Is something wrong with me? Is something wrong with the organization? Am I in the right place?
Yes.
And there's so many questions you go through in your minds, or I did, and I imagined others were struggling with, but I didn't have anybody to talk to.
Gotcha.
And so that the seeds of the ministry I'm doing now, officially incorporated as a 501c3 in 2008, really
yes.
has its roots way back in the early 1980s.
Yeah, and I think that's a whole topic in itself. I think God does these things,
mm-hmm.
at least gets the seed in there long before they become the reality for a lot of us.
That's my experience also.
That's great. So let's go a little farther. I know that Faith, Hope, and Love is all over the world, Tim. Let's get some more specifics. Can you give us a sense of the major places that you minister in the world currently? And typically, what does each of those assignments look like? So they get a kind of a better picture of what you do.
Sure. Well, we've served in 8 different countries up to this point. Mm. 10, if you count Bulgaria, which was the experience I had 3 times in the early 2000s that inspired the eventual development of the ministry. And then Pakistan, if you count Pakistan, because my book, The Spirit of Leaders, has been translated into Urdu there, but I've not stepped on the soil there.
Yes, I understand it. So, isn't that great, though?
So we've had a lot of exposure to different places on 4 different continents, actually. Mm. But the main place, as it's developed, is Myanmar, mm-hmm. Formerly called Burma, mm-hmm. Southeast Asia.
Yes.
And I now teach 1 semester a year at one of the leading seminaries there called the Myanmar Institute of Theology.
Yes.
It's our MIT.
Wow. So talk about, so tell me about the student population in Myanmar and what they're going to do afterwards, et cetera.
All right. Well, it's one of the largest seminaries, and as such, there are about 400 some students in the seminary part of the program and another 600 or so undergraduates. And the seminarians come from all over the country, mm-hmm. and they will return to all their villages and in the different ethnic groups that are represented. There are 135 different ethnic groups in Myanmar,
wow.
and 8 major ones. And so those who come to our seminary at MIT go back and thus become leaders, pastors, Christian workers, organizational leaders. And in most of those places, it's the church that's the primary catalyst within those communities for change and for helping the people. There's such widespread poverty and so many issues,
right.
That the development of leaders is critical for hope for the people.
Absolutely. And, you know, so different than in our seminary. So which church is going to call you afterwards, mm-hmm. or whatever? Are you going to go to a PhD? These are villages. These are, on the ground stuff. And that must be really inspiring to teach, to know the level of impact that's going to happen in all those parts of Burma.
Well, it's very humbling, mm-hmm. and it is inspiring or motivating, mm-hmm. knowing that I was called to serve in a place that had literally no professors with the PhDs in the entire country when I first started in 2007, mm. and now there are few. And knowing that by bringing the education that I've been privileged to have to these young men and women, mm-hmm. I'm able to help them prepare them for teaching and preaching for the rest of their lives as ministers. Mm. And that's inspiring to me for personally to have that opportunity.
You bet.
And then just being in that context and seeing what they have to deal with has been very humbling, as I said a moment ago, because mm. I'm aware of that they're suffering, they're sacrificing, they have so little, especially compared to what we have here in this country.
Yes.
And yet they're willing to give their whole selves in order to be trained and in order to go back and serve.
Yes.
And I'm very touched by that.
Yeah, yeah. So it's faith in action.
It's faith in action and dedication. In
yes.
fact, I mean, in my self-centered, ego-oriented personality, I'm sure there were times I thought I was the great hero going over to serve overseas, and that was quickly debunked.
Yeah,
because I see, no, these are the heroes.
Right.
I have it's a privilege to me to be able to be with them.
You bet.
And to hear their stories and see how God works in their lives, mm-hmm. and I just get to offer a little part.
Yes.
It's an important part, and so I'm there because they've asked me to be there.
Yes.
But really, they're the ones that are doing the great work.
Absolutely. And I've seen that other places where I've been too. Mm-hmm. Right. So what's great is that Tim has also written a few books, and one of them he's used a lot in as a textbook, as a lecture series, or general readers. And I want you to dive into this, Tim, because it's been out for a little while now. This is called The Spirit-Led Leader. Would you tell us about it and its impact?
The Spirit-Led Leader came as a result of work I did leading an organization here in the Twin Cities called Treehouse. Mm-hmm. And when I be I served as a program leader for 5 years, and then when I was asked to become the executive director, I took this course on how to be a spiritual leader in that context. I mean, I'd read a lot of books on how to be a good organizational leader.
Sure.
But I thought, as a Christian, what does it mean to be a Christian leader? I mean, what really makes leadership Christian?
Mm-hmm.
And as I delved into that subject, and I began to think more and more about the role of the Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long story that I talk about in my books, but I'll just mention here is I began to realize that the key to Christian leadership is God working through us. And it's easy to say that as a concept, but how do you experience that in the midst of conflict with a staff member, for example, mm-hmm. in the midst of strategic planning, in the midst of lacking financial resources and anxiety about where that money is going to come from? Mm-hmm. How do you really live that out? Mm-hmm. And that's what I was interested in.
That's so fantastic, because there's so many leaders that may or may not be in Christian organizations, but they really are trying to integrate that. And the reality of that interface, you know, sheep amongst wolves, and this is earth, not heaven, and right.
That's right. It is very challenging, and I know from my own personal experience is that with the slightest bit of pressure, my tendency is to fall back on my flesh, my human instincts.
You bet.
And then my leadership doesn't look anything different than anybody else's, whether they know God or not.
Right.
And that doesn't seem right to me. Something's
Absolutely.
Amiss. And so I don't want it to be like that.
Yeah.
And so that's why I began this program. And I went and did a special program on the East Coast to develop. It was called The Soul of the Executive.
Yes.
And we were required to do a project, meaning we had to apply some of these things we were learning in our context.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that laid the groundwork for prayer with staff, for Bible studies with staff, for experimenting with different ways of leading administrative meetings that would invite God into that process
yes.
more consciously,
mm-hmm.
reflecting on God's presence in it. And so for basically 5 years, I experimented with different ways to bring God into it,
mm-hmm.
Into my leadership role. And at the end of that, or toward the end of that, I thought, I really want to pull this together and offer to other people.
Yes.
And so at that point, the book practically wrote itself.
Yes. Because you lived it for 5 years, right?
Because I lived it for 5 years. Yeah. And really, it's not about anything brilliant that I came up with as much as it was just an expression of what I saw work.
Yeah.
And so that's what the Spirit-Led Leader is about. And it's focused on the leader. So the subtitle is 9 Leadership Practices and Corresponding Soul Principles.
Fantastic. So, yeah, I'd recommend that to anybody. Whether you're in a Christian organization or not in a Christian organization, these principles are critical, I think, in the interface of a leader who really wants to be Christian. This is, like you said, that's a great thing. We're going to have to take a break here. We'll be right back. You're listening to Tim Jeffrey and David Stark on Working with Purpose. Justin and I wanted to take time personally to thank you for listening to our programs and podcasts. We can make a greater impact if we have time with you to be of service to your organization directly. We just want to talk about a few areas that we're currently working in that we can be of service in. Justin, why don't you launch out?
Dave, I see a couple of things. One is siloed organizations, where that structure really prevents them from sensing and collaborating as well as they could. And the other is asset-centered design instead of human-centered design, which leads to a loss of relevance with customers.
Yeah, and I see competitive pressure increasing on many organizations where they're losing clients, they're not getting sales that they should. Also, I'm seeing in growth companies that they don't know the predictable stages they go through, and so all of a sudden they're growing and they stop.
Whatever may be facing you and your organization, Dave and I would love to roll up our sleeves and help you navigate this volatile and complex world. You may simply reach out to us at davidstarkcollective.com and click on the Contact Us page. Now back to the show.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark, and today I have a guest named Tim Jeffrey on, and we're talking about his organization, Faith, Hope, and Love, and also the books that have gone with this. And Tim, thank you so much for talking about Spirit-Led Leader in the first half, and I hope people really take advantage of that. But I'm going to go back to your work now with Faith, Hope, and Love for a second. I know that in your classroom and in the preaching and teaching work, you're challenged because you work through interpreters, at least in some of the places that you go, and you're also facing stressful environments around you. So it's not like a cushy seminary might be here, which is pastoral and et cetera, right? But can you talk about what it's like to have to handle both the sense of interpreter, but also the sense of stressful environments, that aspect of your ministry?
Well, I'd be glad to talk about that. Yeah, it is a stressful environment. I love adventure, Dave. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I am sure there's a whole lot of Tim Jeffrion's love of adventure in this global ministry.
Yes.
But I don't have any problem with that.
Yeah.
But once you get into the setting and into the adventure, you discover a lot of sobering realities.
Mm-hmm.
The poverty is intense. The places where we felt called to go, Myanmar, Vietnam, Cambodia in Asia, and then Rwanda and Congo in Africa.
You bet.
And then Ukraine and Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. And there are some other places as well. These people have really suffered, and many of them are still suffering. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of oppression, outright persecution. Christians tend to be in the minority. I mean, they're a very small minority in Southeast Asia. Mm. And when I see that and I see how people are struggling, it really touches me, and it poses a challenge for me because it raises all sorts of internal questions and issues for me that I have to deal with while I'm trying to teach and help them as well. So there are just a lot of situations there, including just danger, and I have to be careful in some of those settings, what I say, who I say it to,
yes,
and then I have to think about the safety of the people I'm trying to help and serve.
You bet.
And so those are some of the issues. Then I'd add to that the traumatization. I've become much more aware of the impact of trauma on people, how that affects their ability to listen, to learn, to serve. And so what all that means is when I go into those situations, I can't just go in with my books under my arm and charge in and say, hey, here's what you need to know. Not at all.
Here's the syllabus, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I, of course, I come prepared. Yeah. I do have to do more work than I would have to do here to prepare because of the language barriers and et cetera. But probably the biggest thing that I've learned that's helpful is simply listening, to go slow and to listen to what they're saying. How are they seeing the world? What are they experiencing? Mm. And you have to do a lot of listening to learn what they're hearing when I say something, because it may not be the same thing that I think that I'm saying or think that they're hearing.
Totally different language they're processing through. Obviously, radically different circumstances that they're placed into.
Right, and different cultures.
Yeah.
Right. So there are a lot of challenges because of the settings.
Yeah. And I think until we've really listened hard in a setting, it's hard to say anything. And that's why it's so important, I think.
Right.
So talk about the kind of, I almost want to say, what's a daily walk like where you live over there? Or, you know, when you're going to go shopping or whatever, what's that look like, Tim?
I'll give you one picture in Myanmar. They are typically six lanes of highway that I have to cross to get to a restaurant or a store on the other side. Maybe eight lanes of cars on the six-lane highway because nobody follows the rules.
Right.
I don't know if anybody even knows the rules. I'm pretty sure there are rules because I see lines painted there, so somebody must have thought that they were supposed to do something. And you literally have to – you try to picture this. I run to the line and wait for cars to race by And then I run to the next line and to the next line till I get all the way across.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's not just me. I mean, this is everybody.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is when I come back here and try and do that, people look at me like something's really wrong with me. I say, well, this is how you cross roads, isn't it?
That's right. So what's on that road? Are there mopeds and are there either bikes or what's...
Well, in Vietnam and Cambodia, they're just – the roads are absolutely chock full of little motorbikes.
Right.
But in Yangon, which is used to be called Rangoon in Myanmar, they're banned. So they're just taxis and small trucks and buses.
Got it.
And so there are no motorbikes.
Right, got it. So it's paved.
It's paved, yes.
Got it. Okay, just trying to get a picture.
In Myanmar, right.
Yeah. So when you go to a shop there, Tim, what's that like?
There are a lot of these, what we call in this country, mom and pop shops.
Yeah.
Because that's a big economy, is simply a family trying to sell something.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of little things that might sell, whether we call them trinkets,
yes,
here in this country, or little food items.
Yes.
Or
a true marketplace, right?
Right. It's a real marketplace. Just shop after shop after shop, meaning shack after shack after shack, or table after table.
Yeah.
That's what it really is.
Just getting by. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to shift back now because I know you've got a brand new book out,
mm-hmm,
that I really want you to talk about. And so tell us, it's called, by the way, Saying Yes to God. And Dr. Tim Geoffrion, Geoffrion, just so you know, it's with Cascade Books. We'll talk about, but talk about the book, Tim, and how it's going to serve
sure,
your ministry.
Well, Saying Yes to God is a culmination of a lot of thought and essay writing and experiences with spiritual life coaching clients that I've had. And it's an attempt to talk about the nuts and bolts of how someone really grows who's already a mature Christian to some extent, or is in the process of maturing,
mm-hmm,
but maybe is at a wall or feels stuck in some ways, or is looking for some fresh insights that address real experiences that they're having.
Yes.
These aren't idealistic ideas of what the Christian life should be like. It's what it's really like.
Yeah.
and how we struggle and how a believer struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Saying yes to God is for people who have already said yes to God in some way.
Yes.
But they would like that yes to become deeper, more profound.
Yeah.
To go the next step in some way.
Mm-hmm. So talk about how would either an individual or groups of people together, or how would the people use this book, Tim, if they got a hold of it?
Well, there are, at the end of each chapter, there are study questions, but maybe it's better to say they are questions for reflection.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of book is not simply for intellectual bantering back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a book designed for somebody who wants to change, mm-hmm, somebody who wants their life to be better or closer to God and more fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for that to happen, they need to be thinking about and connecting to God and allowing the words of each chapter to touch their lives, and that takes time. And so the guidance you get at the end of each chapter is these are some things to think about or journal about or pray with or talk to a friend about or your spiritual director about,
mm-hmm,
and let the process work inside of you, and then as each individual does his or her work, then get together with a group of people and discuss together.
That's great.
What are you experiencing? How is God working in your life? It's very process-oriented that way.
Saying Yes to God by Dr. Tim Geoffrion. How would people, kind of closing here, how would people connect with you and learn more about the organization and in buying these books?
I think the best way is just go to my website. The Faith, Hope, and Love Global Ministries website is simply fhlglobal.org.
fhlglobal.org. So that's Faith, Hope, Love, the first letters.
Right, exactly.
Global.org.
Right.
That's great.
And there's a resource library. Mm-hmm. And that's where there are 75 essays I've written, the books I've written. This interview will eventually turn into some kind of a podcast that'll be on the website. So there are all the resources are there, including the books. They can read some of the chapters of the book. right from there, online. And then there's a place you can click to order them if you want.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being on today, Tim.
My pleasure.
And I just want to recommend that you not only find out about the ministry, but also look to these books. I've known Tim a long time, and I know that the stuff that he's going to give you will be very practical, be very tomorrow morning kind of use. So I hope that you'll take advantage of that. You've been listening to Working with Purpose today with David Stark. And typically, Justin Rory has the week off. And with Dr. Tim Jeffrey on today, we're so glad that he was here. Again, you can get a hold of these at the davidstarkcollective.com. You'll see the podcast there. You can also tune in at iTunes at Working with Purpose. And hopefully, we're every week, so we hope you'll continue to listen with us. Justin's going to be back with us this next week. Thank you for listening today.